Live from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space at WNYC, it's a Brian Lehrer Show special, 10 Questions That Count. In about a week, people across the United States will open their mailboxes to find a census questionnaire. Maybe you already got that letter that says the census questionnaire is coming. It includes 10 questions, is supposed to take about 10 minutes to fill out, and is due to be mailed back to the Census Bureau by April 1st. Now, that sounds simple enough, but getting people to send in their census forms is not always easy, especially in New York City and vicinity. Historically, New York has had the lowest percentage of people mail back their forms of any large city in the country. In 2000, only 55% of census forms mailed to New Yorkers were completed and returned. This compares to a national average of 66%. In some neighborhoods, the response rate was as low as 40%. And as a result, the city has lost billions of dollars in federal spending since the last census was conducted 10 years ago. It may even have affected the number of members of Congress who represent our area. So with so much at stake, why is it so hard to get New Yorkers to send in their census forms? What's being done this time to encourage full participation in the census? Some of the biggest pockets of resistance are immigrant communities, and that's going to be our major focus today. That's a major issue in a city where immigrants and people of color account for 60% of the population. Today, in this special hour of the Brian Lehrer Show, produced in cooperation with Feet in Two Worlds, we're going to look at why many immigrants either don't or won't send in their census forms. Later in the program, in the second hour from the Green Space, we'll do some other things, including a New York City subway quiz, where those of you in our Green Space audience and at home will be able to win some prizes if you are subway scholars. But for now, we will talk to people who are part of a huge effort that's going on to get immigrants and members of other historically undercounted New York communities, such as African Americans and Puerto Ricans and renters and the recently foreclosed on, to participate in the census. We have with us on our Green Space stage the U.S. Census Bureau's New York Partnership Coordinator, Rafael Dominguez, Angelo Falcone, Chair of the Census Bureau's Hispanic Advisory Committee, and Mayor Bloomberg's New York City Census Coordinator, Stacey Cumberbatch. And applaud for yourselves, an audience of New Yorkers from many immigrant communities and elsewhere around the tri-state region. They're humble. They didn't want to applaud for themselves. Our three guests on the stage applauded for them. And listeners, as always, when we're in the green space, you can watch today's show, if you choose, on live streaming video on our website. You can see me and our guests and our audience, and in a few minutes we'll be showing some very interesting maps, very colorful maps of what makes parts of New York hard to count and parts of New Jersey hard to count. And we'll also be showing a comedy sketch from Saturday Night Live that we think was from the 1990 census year that you won't want to miss. So to see us on live streaming video, free of course, just go to our website, WNYC.org. The video link is right on the homepage. Or you can go to our brand new 10 Questions That Count website. For that, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we've got the video up there, too. And as we proceed, audience in the green space, we want you to raise your hand if you have a question about the census or if you think something makes your community hard to count. And we'll take the same thing on the phones. Listeners, you can start getting in line to call in if you have a question about the census or if you think something makes your community hard to count. And you can define community however you want, your ethnic community, your building, whatever. 212-433-WNYC, as always, 212-433-9692. Now, what makes someone hard to count? The Census Bureau lists the top 12 obstacles to a full and accurate census. Ready? The first six are housing indicators. And listen to how much these sound like New York. A high percentage of renters in a neighborhood. Buildings with multiple apartments. Whoa. Crowded housing. Lack of telephones. High vacancy rates. New condos, anyone? And high rates of people on public assistance. Most of those are very New York. And there are six of what the census calls personal indicators, being in poverty, not a high school graduate, unemployed, living in a complex household, and mobility, I think this will include foreclosure rates this year, as well as language isolation. So when you take those 12 factors, you can see why New York would be a harder than average place to count. And for our guests, let's go down some of those. Raphael from the Census Bureau, why would being in poverty make someone hard to count?
Well, basically the thing is that when you're dealing with communities that may have lower incomes more historically, chances are a lot of the times they also fall in line with other challenges as well, which kind of coincide. For instance, like lower educational attainment might be a dual attribute that a community may have. But reaching out to them, for instance, a lot of the times they may be in fear that any kind of benefits they may be receiving, whether it's unemployment or some other kind of public assistance, that those types of benefits might be affected by them being counted. Definitely another issue.
Right. So Stacey Cumberbatch from the mayor's office, let me go to you on this. That was another category independently, high rates of public assistance making people hard to count. Wouldn't someone on food stamps or welfare be on the government's radar automatically and make them easier to count?
Well, no, because the census is all about a self-count. It's not about looking at using government records to say that someone exists. So the census is about a form that gets mailed to every person, every household to fill out. So it's really about people filling that out to be counted themselves.
And Angelo Falcone from the Census's Hispanic Advisory Committee, how about language isolation? What does isolation mean first in that phrase, and why are the language isolated hard to count?
Well, that's a technical term that the Census Bureau uses to talk about areas where households that have very few members who speak English well. And they call them linguistically isolated, which, by the way, the American Anthropological Association has challenged the Census Bureau, saying they think that's a negative term. But basically, it's one of the things that's been a real victory, I think, in the Latino communities, that we finally got the Census Bureau to do bilingual forms. Mm-hmm. So in areas that have 20% or more Spanish-speaking people, you get a form that is in Spanish and English. I got my advance letter. It was in Spanish and English. I was able to read both sides of it.
And they're advertising in Spanish and English as well, maybe also in other languages. We'll find out if that's the case later. Yes, I guess it is. And we're going to play a clip right now of a Spanish language commercial for the census. This is a 30-second spot. And for those who need it, we will get a translation afterwards. Take a listen. And those of you in the green space, take a look.
Ella tardó horas y horas en diseñar la comunidad de sus sueños. Tú podrás ayudar a hacerla realidad en unos 10 minutos. Contestando 10 simples preguntas para el censo, ayudarás a que tu comunidad reciba los fondos y beneficios que necesita. Y tranquilo, la ley federal protege tus respuestas. Para progresar, lo tenemos que enviar. Censo del 2010 de los Estados Unidos.
Rafael, I didn't know they had Gumby in Latin America from the looks of the design of that. But tell us what was said there.
Well, I mean, basically what they're saying is that by being counted, a lot of the funds are going into the community to build schools, hospitals. And as you can see in the claymation, you saw the development of different parks, sidewalks. And basically, I think the whole idea behind that was to communicate the potential quality of life that can come from being counted. And that's the message that they're trying to resonate in all communities. And obviously that was targeted at the Latino community.
Angela, you want to add anything about that spot?
No, that, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that, you know, those are very positive messages about how the Census Bureau helps communities, brings resources into communities, and try to get that concept. We also, in some of the work we do, outreach, we also take the opposite view. We understand that, for example, in the Latino community, a lot of people don't want Latinos to fill out the form. So we tell people, hey, you know, listen, there are people that don't want you to fill out this thing, so do it just to bust their chops. another approach.
There you go. That's what's Spanish for do it just to bust their chops?
Buster the chops.
As they were saying in Washington Heights just the other day. All right, let's take a phone call from a listener in Teaneck, I think. Is it Willa? Willa, you're on WNYC. Hello?
It is. Hello.
How you doing?
My question is, what about the undocumented people that when I look out my window are coming home from work or are walking their children in strollers or just kids walking around? What about the, and I'm very careful not to say immigrants because I'm an immigrant, undocumented people.
Are you raising an issue here saying you think they should not be counted, or are you curious
no,
if they're no, going
I,
to?
I am not. That is not my opinion. I believe they, you know, it's kind of a wonderful thing to be counted. If you're alive and you're witnessed, it's wonderful to be counted. And I know that in order for our government to do a good job in this census, they need to know how many people are here. And I'm quite clear, these people are here.
There you go. Willa, right to the point. Thank you very much. The existential census. Stacey Cumberbatch, talk about why the Census Bureau counts undocumented immigrants, because this is an issue for some Americans.
So the census is required by the United States Constitution, and it is a count of every person living in the United States as of April 1st of 2010. And that count is regardless of citizenship status, regardless of legal status, immigration status. The Constitution is silent about one being a citizen in order to be counted. It just says everyone is counted. So the census questionnaire does not ask about citizenship or immigration status. It's silent. It's irrelevant to the count. So the Constitution dictates that everybody gets counted, regardless of, as I said, immigration status, whether you're documented or undocumented.
Why do they want to know?
Well, under the Constitution, that provision, it's really first about apportionment, right? Dividing up the congressional seats among the states every 10 years based on that count. And it's also about driving federal funding to localities and states. So a lot of all of the federal funding, in fact, that goes to the states and the cities in part is based on census data.
And yeah. Angelo, at the end of the Spanish language ad that we played, didn't it say basically your information will remain safe? And was that sort of code for undocumented immigrants?
Yeah, basically, not just undocumented. There are other people, for example, that are involved in the underground economy, for example, especially these days. So people are very wary about giving this information to a federal official. But the one of the messages that we're trying to get out is that this information remains confidential, that there are steep fines. Staff of the census that collect this information basically have a lifelong swearing in where they basically are prohibited from sharing this information not only with other agencies but also with individuals. So the fines are up to $250,000 and you go to jail for 5 years for doing this. So it's kind of interesting. So we say, look, this information is not going to be shared with other agencies like, you know, immigration, and also it's not going to be shared with your landlord. For example, if you're renting to someone illegally or something under the book, that information also will not be shared with other individuals as well. So getting that message across is tough because who trusts the government these days? And also post 9/11, in terms of the Patriot Act, has raised all sorts of questions about, well, does the Patriot Act trump all this stuff? Mm-hmm. And it was great because we finally got the Justice Department last week to state that it doesn't, so that we have all these indications saying that that this stuff is confidential and that there's backup for it at the highest levels of government in terms of this information being safe to participate.
In fact, here I think is a relevant caller calling anonymously as an anonymous census worker in New Jersey. Thank you so much for calling in. Hi.
Oh, hi. I've never called in before.
I'm glad you called us now. So you're doing census taking?
Yes, I am. In fact, I'm on the job right now. That's why I'm anonymous.
Your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm filling out a form while I waited here.
I'm just kidding. Calling our show about the census, we'll call that official business. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was calling about, you know, being trained in and the threats over our head if we share any information. But I did want to make another point. What I'm working on now is the census is setting up locations all over communities be counted boxes and tables starting next on the 19th to the 19th of March, the 19th of April, there will be people available to help people fill out their census forms. And as far as language isolation goes, those forms are available in almost any language you can think of. So if anyone knows someone who doesn't understand the form, they should look for a local library or social service agency, and they can find the form in their own language.
I'm glad you pointed out those locations. And they're being mailed in English and in Spanish. For the other languages, you have to request one or go seek one out. But libraries, social service agencies, two of the places you can do that. You said something about the threat of prosecution against census workers by the Bureau
Well, no, that was what was mentioned, that when we're sworn in, if we share information, that there can be a fine or up to 5 years in jail.
Thank you so much. Good luck out there.
Thank you.
Now, when we come back from a break, we will play part of a Saturday Night Live census skit that we think was from 1990, featuring Tim Meadows. That was the Tim Meadows era in Saturday Night Live, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So probably the 1990, we thought either that or 1980, but we think it's 1990, and Christopher Walken. So if you're listening near a computer, definitely click onto our live green space video stream right now to be ready to see this when we come back from a break. Go to WNYC.org. You'll see the video stream right on the homepage. Brian Lehrer on WNYC from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space. From the Jerome L. Green Performance Space at WNYC, this is 10 Questions That Count, the Brian Lehrer Show Census Project. As we debut some months of census programming here, you can see the website for it that we have debuted today. We are launching our 10 Questions That Count site, which you can get to through our usual page. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Today's special in the green space in conjunction with the group Feet in Two Worlds, the Immigration Reporting Project. We have the U.S. Census Bureau's New York Partnership Coordinator, Rafael Dominguez, Angelo Falcone, Chair of the Census Bureau's Hispanic Advisory Committee, and Mayor Bloomberg's New York City Census Coordinator, Stacey Cumberbatch, on stage with us. And listeners, as always, when we're in the green space, you can watch today's show, if you choose, on live streaming video on our site. You can see me and our guests and our audience on the homepage at WNYC.org, or go to that 10 Questions That Count site, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And now, as promised, the census taker's job is not always so easy, as I think our previous caller could attest, and as we will learn in this clip from Saturday Night Live, featuring Tim Meadows as the census taker and Christopher Walken, who answers the door at his apartment.
Can I help you?
Yes, Mr. Leonard, I'm with the U.S. Census Bureau. We sent you a census form, but you failed to return it to us.
My mail is piled up like crazy.
Yeah. Well, I just need to fill out this census form with you.
Great.
Okay. How many people live in this residence?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. I'm bad with numbers. Maybe 80.
80 people live in this apartment?
Seems high, doesn't it? Not 80. How about 4? I don't know. I'm so bad at guesstimating.
Well, why don't you just take your time and count?
Okay. There's me, my wife, our plants. We have some candy bars.
Well, you know, we don't count candy bars or plants.
Yeah. Then there's just the two of us. Boy, I really overshot it with the 80, didn't I?
Listen, don't worry about it, okay? I'm going to put you down as the primary resident, okay? Now, are you currently employed?
Yeah, part of the time.
Well, you work part-time. How many days a week?
Every day, but just part of the day, from 9 to 5.
So you work a full day?
I wouldn't say that. There are huge chunks of time at night where I'm just asleep.
All right, that's from Tim Meadows, Christopher Walken, circa 1990, we believe. Rafael Domingo from the Dominguez from the Census Bureau. Your people come back and tell you stories like that?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's remarkable how much they actually sound and look like that, you know. But I have to tell you, it's good that there's something out there that brings a sense of ease and humor to the process, because the population looks at this as such. Obviously, it is extremely serious. Anything that happens once every 10 years and costs billions of dollars to operate throughout the nation is definitely something that is going to have serious implications on the community. But to see something like that, it definitely, you know, puts people at ease. And I think it's important. I mean, that's the first thing I saw before even starting to work for the census. And I thought, a lot of people looked at the U.S. Census Bureau as not the most exciting agency to work for. But after seeing that, you know, at least I kind of felt that there was a sense of humor out there. And, you know, I have no problem with that. So
there you go. Also joining us now on our stage is Steve Romalewski, director of the CUNY Mapping Service. And viewers at home via the web streaming, keep your video streams going, because he's been making amazing, colorful maps of local census tracts in New York and New Jersey, as well as elsewhere around the country, and what makes people there hard to count. So again, if you're near a computer, you can log on to our video stream and see these as Steve Romalewski walks us through these. Steve Romalewski, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
We're all eyes and ears. What are these colorful areas of the New York area, county by county?
Christopher Walken's a tough act to follow, but I'll do my best. So what we're seeing now is a map that shows the New York City area, and it's from the censushardtocountmaps.org website that our team at the Center for Urban Research at the CUNY Graduate Center developed. And this is showing, using color coding, from the light yellow to dark red shading, the percent of each county's population that the Census Bureau thinks will be hard to count in 2010. So the darker red areas are where 50% or more of the county's population or the borough's population, like in the Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and even out in Hudson and Essex County in New Jersey, will be difficult to reach for the 2010 census. But you can also then start to zoom in a little closer and see actual census tracts or local neighborhoods. And the red shading there indicates the hardest to count census tracts, or what the Census Bureau thinks will be hardest to count. And the purpose of these maps is basically to take the Census Bureau's analysis that they did, looking at the 12 characteristics that Brian talked about earlier, and to try to help organizations, the many groups that are out there, to try to boost participation in the 2010 census, to help all of you get the biggest bang for your buck, to really focus in and focus on the areas that are really going to matter.
So, Steve, let me back up a minute. In fact, can you back up one
Sure.
slide for our listeners who may not see this on video stream? The darkest red counties are the hardest to count in our area. So what are those counties?
Well, that's where the greatest percent of the population is going to be hardest to count. So
mm-hmm.
that's in New York City, it's the Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn. Queens is a little smaller percentage, between 30 and 50% of the population likely will be hard to count. And then Hudson County and Essex County in New Jersey, northern New Jersey, likely will be the hardest to count.
Okay, and then forward again to that next map, where it looks like, what is this, northern Brooklyn?
So this is Brooklyn, more or less, and the Lower East Side, and Chinatown and Manhattan, a little piece of New Jersey.
Neighborhood by neighborhood.
Right, so it's it shows the census tracts. And one thing about the maps is that it not only shows where the hard-to-count population is, but we'll look at another map, and it highlights each of the different characteristics the Census Bureau looked at. So this one's showing the patterns of where the linguistically or language isolated population is. The darker blue is where a greater proportion of the households are have difficulty speaking English, and the green and light yellow ones where a smaller percentage. So this is useful for groups who are trying to plan their outreach. They need to know, do they need to have bilingual questionnaires? Do they need to change their media strategies to focus on these areas? And you can then also click on each tract and get detailed information about it, including specifics.
So there's one neighborhood in Brooklyn that you just clicked on,
yeah.
Which is what?
This is down in the, I guess, the maybe the Howard Beach area, Canarsie, and it's just one census tract, and so this gives you the details about the population that lives there based on the 2000 census. So it's a little dated, but the Census Bureau puts a lot of faith in these numbers.
So Canarsie, Brooklyn, Howard Beach, Queens, percentage of the population in poverty. I see your stat there, 31%.
Right.
Let's see.
And then you could scroll down. So, for example, this is an area that it's not that linguistically isolated, as it were. And so of the 22 households in this census tract that have language challenges for English, 100% of them, all of those speak Spanish language.
Let me stop you for a minute and bring Angelo Falcone into this. Once you identify an area through Steve's Maps, which the Census Bureau uses, or other means, as linguistically isolated, and they're likely to give you maybe a 40% count, historically, if left on their own, how do you reach out and try to maximize that count?
Well, the Census Bureau has a paid advertising campaign. So they're actually putting ads in hopefully local media, local papers. There's a partnership program which, you know, Rafael runs, which works with community organizations and tries to basically use what they call trusted voices, people that are known in the community that can speak out, have organizations put up literature. Rafael just mentioned to me that he was in a restaurant in Queens, and the restaurant, which is a Latino restaurant, actually did the placemats. It had a message. It's taking you 10 minutes to eat or wait for the meal?
10 minutes to wait for your food.
Just wait for your food.
It'll take just as long to fill out the form.
So I think those kind of strategies are important. But also what's important to understand is the hard-to-count index, which is these indicators put together and kind of indicate areas where it's going to be difficult, is that there are also exceptions in New York. So that it's not that clear. For example, Washington Heights last time had probably the highest response rate of any area, and it fits all these indicators. So it shows that, yeah, there are these indicators, there are these obstacles, but it is possible with smart planning to basically overcome those kinds of problems.
So this is, in other words, the most on-the-ground community organizing since Obama ran against Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it's true.
And let's take a phone call, very relevant to what we were just talking about. This is Andre in the Bronx, a landlord, I think. Andre, thanks so much for calling.
Good morning, Brian Lehrer and everyone at the Green Center. How are you?
The Green Space at WNYC.
Green Space. my concern here and the question is that, my wife and I, we ran into this problem about 10 years ago when the census thing came around. But a lot of our tenants we know are not documented, and they go on vacation. And there's nothing really we can do to say, stay, fill out the form, because they don't really want, immigration, they don't want the drug dealers, they don't want, we're in Soundview. We're not a very wealthy area of the Bronx at all. We get, if they say any funding, it's stolen from us. I think that the numbers that are going to reflect some of the most crucially, impoverished areas are still going to be completely inaccurate, just for the fear of people thinking, okay, you finally got a job in America. Well, now you got to go.
Anything you do that you do as a landlord to help encourage your tenants to get counted?
If I know there's at least four people living in the unit, I try and get to know everyone's name. I have a one bedroom in one of my buildings that I do know of 14 people occupying.
Wow.
Which I know is a little tight. But they all got the same last name, and they all look the same, so I guess they're all the same family members. They just don't have a TV.
There may be other ways to distinguish than that, a little more specific. But, Andre, thank you. That's a great call and very, very concerned. Stacey Cumberbatch representing the mayor's office. What do you do in a case like that?
So, I mean, that's a great example because that's probably very typical of New York City and the way we live in New York City, that a lot of times people are doubled or tripled up. And you have, on top of that, people that might be undocumented. So how do you allay fears, both in terms of keeping their information private as well as their living situation? So as Angelo was saying, is that trusted voices. And one of the things that we've been doing and why Mayor Bloomberg established a city census coordinator in this office is to outreach to various communities through our network within the city. A lot of the organizations, as well as what can the city do to allay those fears. So, for example, in situations like New York City Housing Authority, where there might be residents that are living in an apartment, but they're not on the lease, similar to what this gentleman called. The chairman of the Housing Authority sent a letter to every apartment saying, look, this is confidential information. We're never going to get it at the Housing Authority.
And Raphael from the Census Bureau, I know there was a push recently, which was not successful, to try to get the Obama administration to suspend immigration raids during the census counting period over the next few months. I believe they did suspend those raids in 2000.
Well, they discussed the possibility of a moratorium on immigration raids. But again, this is something that technically they would never issue an official letter saying that they were putting a moratorium. At this point, I've heard nothing from Homeland Security because the U.S. Census Bureau operates completely apart from every other federal agency, including Homeland Security.
So
but I haven't heard anything.
Let's go back to Stephen Romilewski from the CUNY Mapping Service. Take us through a few more maps.
Well, so Angela was pointing out that even though the Census Bureau might think some areas are hard to count for a variety of reasons, in 2000, maybe they had a high response rate. So what we've done also is include a layer on the maps that you can add to see where the lower response rate areas were and compare and contrast that with the hard-to-count, projected hard-to-count areas. So we're looking at Washington Heights now, and in fact, because the map in that area does not have the red hash marks, it does indicate that they had a relatively high participation rate, so people need to take that into account as they're planning their outreach.
Important lesson for census and for everything else, that organization matters. Even if you're, you can use this for education and lots of things. If you're in a population center that's considered difficult to achieve a count in, difficult to achieve other things in, it doesn't mean you give up. It means you figure out how to do it and achieve success. Next map.
So then you can also see the different patterns. So this is looking at that area of Brooklyn again, the northern part of Brooklyn, and you can see this is showing concentrations of population in poverty, where the dark green areas are higher percentage, 51% or more. And this contrasts greatly with the overall hard-to-count pattern. So even though areas are hard to count, again, the reasons why might be different neighborhood by neighborhood. And then let me point out one other feature that we've added in terms of trying to broaden your outreach efforts and broaden the constituencies that you're working with. We've added a live Twitter feed. So anyone who's tweeting about the maps, hopefully this internet connection will bring it up, you'll see where they're tweeting from and what they're tweeting about regarding the census. And you can reach out to them and find news articles that are about the census and use that to enhance your strategies and reach out to more and more people.
All right. Before you go, did you also have some New Jersey maps? You have them at hand?
Yes. So this shows the Newark area, the map that I just jumped to. This is these are the tracts in the Newark area that the Census Bureau considers hardest to count.
That's a lot of Newark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good chunk. And one thing that we've added to the maps to make it easy for organizations to use is that the maps are overlaid on top of Google Maps. And so as you're planning your door-to-door outreach, you can zoom into a particular tract and you can change how transparent the color shading map is, so you can actually see where the streets are as well as where the hard-to-count shading is and use that to plan your door-to-door door-knocking campaigns.
Thank you very much. Tell people in our listening audience as well as here in the green space where they can see more of your maps.
So you can access this at www.censushardtocountmaps, the two is spelled out, T-O, hardtocountmaps.org. Or at our website at the WNYC.gov website. There'll be a link there.
At our radio station website, yes. We have a link at WNYC.org, not to be confused with the city government website. We are not city government, NYC.gov. Stephen Romilewski from the CUNY Mapping Service. Thank you for some great work. Brian Lehrer on WNYC from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space. We'll continue in a minute. We'll actually go down a few of the questions on the census form and ask, why in heaven's name are they asking me this? And much more. Stay with us. Thank you.
2010 году помогут нашему району получить необходимое федеральное финансирование для улучшения качества жизни. Это не просто лист бумаги.
Yes, that was Russian. And from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space at WNYC, this is 10 Questions That Count, the Brian Lehrer Show Census Project. We have the U.S. Census Bureau's New York Partnership Coordinator, Rafael Dominguez, Angelo Falcone, Chair of the Census Bureau's Hispanic Advisory Committee, and Mayor Bloomberg's New York City Census Coordinator, Stacey Cumberbatch, and an audience of New Yorkers from many immigrant communities and elsewhere. And again, listeners, as always, when we're in the green space, you can watch today's show if you choose on live streaming video on our website. You can see me and our guests and our audience. Anybody speak Russian? Anybody here speak Russian? Can translate that little clip? I know it somehow promoted the census, but no, I guess we have no Russian speakers in the House. We do want to meet some of the other people who are in the House here, who have some important things to add. Where's Seema Agnani? Seema, hi. You want to stand up so people here can see you and tell everybody what group you represent and what kind of work you're doing?
Well, I'm with Chaya CDC. We're based in Jackson Heights. Work primarily with the South Asian community, so those from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, as well as the Caribbean, the diaspora. So we work primarily in northwestern and southwestern Queens, where there was a large undercount in the last census. And so we are going out there and doing direct outreach. We're doing PSAs in Bangla and Nepali as well. And our, you know, one of the things I wanted to really point out is that in the neighborhoods we're working in, about 35% of the homes have basement apartments that are not necessarily accounted for. And so I know the city did a lot of work to make sure that a lot of those units were added, but the owners of those homes have been fined for renting those units, and so the tenants are discouraged to disclose their
residence. So the owners may not be as proactive as the landlord, Andre, from Queen, from the Bronx, who called before.
Mm-hmm. No, in fact, I think that they'll be discouraging. You know, if the forms are sent to the owner, they will not necessarily be sharing it with the tenant.
So how do you try to get around that?
So those tenants can go to a be-counted site and get a form. Otherwise, the goal is really to educate both the owners and the tenants that the buildings department does not get this information. And also, you know, a lot of the people we work with are Muslim, and they are also afraid to put down their names. You know, we have a history of profiling in this country based on ethnicity, and so I think that's another fear that a lot of people have.
Thank you very much. Valeria Treves, sitting next to you, you want to just take the microphone, tell us what group you're with and what your work involves.
I work with NICE, New Immigrant Community Empowerment. We're also based in Jackson Heights, Queens, and working in the Western Queens regions in neighborhoods designated as hard to count, Jackson Heights, Elmhurst, East Elmhurst, Corona, Woodside. My organization works primarily with recently arrived, low-wage, undocumented immigrants. So this is a particular community that has posed a bit of a problem for the census in terms of outreach. Our model is based on a peer-to-peer model. We feel like there's been general awareness from the census efforts in terms of advertisements, such as the ones that we saw today. But people need to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody who's a trusted voice, somebody that looks like them, somebody that will convince them to take the time out to fill the questionnaire. We're training our community members as promotores comunitarios, outreach workers, and they're going to informal work sites, for example, day labor sites. They're going to the transportation hubs, eateries, like was mentioned today, to engage people one-on-one to get them to fill out the form. In addition to illegal conversions, like Seema discussed, there's a lot of overcrowding in apartments. So issues in terms, when you have many families doubled up or many immigrant workers working together, who's the head of household, right? If I'm renting a room from somebody else who's renting from somebody else, is that person going to put me on the form? A lot of people are convinced they will not get put on the form. They're moving around a lot from apartment to apartment.
In other words, the census form asks somebody to kind of act as head of household, whether that means they're the boss of me or not, and fill in for all the people, the 14 people living in that apartment or whatever it is.
Yeah, and the person that gets the form may not know everybody. When you're talking about undocumented immigrants renting spaces, the mail is not always a high priority or checking the mail. We're talking about communities that are unbanked. For example, it's not like they're getting bills that they're paying through checks in the mail. There's a lot of issues with accessing that mail. The person that gets it may not know the names of everybody. They don't want to put down their phone numbers to have to answer questions about everybody else. So we're really trying to convince people, talk to whoever's getting the mail. Make sure you get put on the form. If you didn't get put on the form, come to our site at our community center, and we will give you a form as a Be Counted site.
Thank you very much. And next to her is Rong Chao Ching from the newspaper Tsingtao Daily, which publishes primarily in Chinatown as well as to elsewhere in the Chinese New York area community, right?
That's right, yeah. We're the major Chinese language newspapers in New York City. I think I'm not on the front line, but I'm just covering the news. So I happen to know some of the situation in Chinatown. For people from the Census Bureau, I have to say that you got really good partners in the community, because we're called almost like every 2 weeks for a news event, which like community organizations who participate in the census just basically they're just repeating what they were saying, why you have to be counted, and all sorts of things. But they use all the occasions, Chinese New Year or even the International Women's Day to have this press conference. And so that we will have a story about the census almost like every 2 weeks. And then our readers will know, why this is so important to them.
Every 2 weeks, you got to up it. At least between now and July when this is all going on, or between now and April 1st when they really want to get people to send in the forms without having a census taker go to their door. And since Chinese, Rong, is one of the six official languages that the census forms are printed in, that should be an advantage to the Chinese community, but that's not one of the languages that the forms are being mailed out in. Only in English and Spanish are they being mailed to homes. So if a person wants a form in Chinese, they have to request it. How much of a problem do you think that is?
Well, I think that won't be a major problem, because there are so many community organizations who are helping to make things happen. And they publish their phone number and their addresses in our newspaper. So whoever wants a form, they can just directly walk to their office to get the form. I don't think that's a major problem. I think the major problem in our community is the mobile people, and also undocumented immigrants and people who cramped into a same household.
Thank you very much. Let's take another phone call. Howard in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Howard, thanks for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I want to speak to a point one of your panelists made before about the Constitution and the census. The way I understand it, the Constitution simply mandates a headcount and nothing more of the population of the country every 10 years. It doesn't speak to rental history or ethnic background or income or any of these things. And I'm just curious as to how a long questionnaire like this comes to being, when basically it's simply the Constitution says count how many people there are in the country. I think that...
Howard, I'm going to leave it there because we're running short on time, but I think your question is very clear, and I think it's a question that a lot of people have. So, for example, Stacey Cumberbatch from the mayor's office coordinating the census in New York City, question 5 asks your name. If they're just counting heads, why does the government want to know your name?
Well, the Census Bureau will let you know that they want to know the name connected with the address so that they can account that there's not a double count. So, for example, let's say there were two names, the same two names and one address, they would call up to make sure someone didn't fill out the form twice. That's basically why the Census Bureau is asking for one's name.
That's also why they're asking for your phone number?
Yes.
So, Angelo, I mean, if I'm on the no-call list because I don't want telemarketers to bother me, or I'm generally suspicious of government surveillance of my phone calls, can I say none of your business?
Well, you could leave it blank, but what happens is you may have somebody visiting you possibly to get that information.
Right.
Because one of the things that someone mentioned, the landlord, the friendly landlord, mentioned that people go on vacation, but please remember, you should send in the form. If you don't send it in, I think the Bureau sent somebody up to 6 visits to try to get that information from you. And then ultimately, the fun part here is that also the Census Bureau also creates people. It's kind of like God. If they can't get to you, they impute characteristics from your neighbors to you. So if there's some reason they no way they can get into your apartment, they have no information they can get, they'll just kind of create you.
Can I clarify that? Thank you. Basically, what he means is after those 6 attempts, there's basically a last resort operation that we have where we'll ask the neighbors adjacent to the household about the household characteristics, how many people they think live in that household. Obviously, we want the most accurate information from you.
Right.
We don't want to have to ask your neighbors, and we do not create people.
So if you don't want to be created as a fictitious, hypothetical, statistical, composite human being.
That's what I meant. That's
if
what
you
meant.
Don't want somebody from the government coming knocking at your door, just fill out the form and mail it back.
Yep.
Who here has a question about the census or wants to talk about why your community may be hard to count? Hi, right in the front.
Hi. What measures are in place to outreach to the homeless?
To outreach to the homeless. Stacey, you want to take that?
Rafael, but the Census Bureau has a separate operation to count the homeless, and they're going to do that the end of March. And they have 2 operations. One is it's a count of going to, for example, shelters. They have a list of shelters that actually the city provided. They look to nonprofits to get that information, soup kitchens, et cetera. They also do a count and go to known locations where homeless people congregate here in New York City. So there are 2 days that they actually do that count specifically.
Looking for street homeless.
Street homeless as well as homeless that are accessing services in a variety of locations.
Rafael, very briefly, if there's anything to add.
Basically, it's just called a service-based enumeration, and it's exactly what Stacey says. We work very closely with homeless service providers to capture those numbers.
Yes, question over there.
My son is a sleepaway college student, and I was wondering whether he'll be counted at college or counted at home.
All right. The law states that the person is counted on April 1st where they're residing on April 1st. So if they're, for instance, in Syracuse University, that's where your son would be counted, in Syracuse. And that's pretty much the way the policy is on that.
In fact, question 10, does person 1 sometimes live or stay somewhere else, in college housing, in the military, in jail or prison, in a nursing home? And that's to prevent against an overcount.
Right.
So they can see if somebody answers yes to one of those categories when somebody's also going to be counted at that location. Another question in the back.
Hi. If an apartment complex is warehousing apartments, then that would affect the census, wouldn't it? Warehousing in the sense that they're not allowing the apartments to have renters.
Well, just nobody lives in that particular. If nobody lives there, then it's not affecting the census, I think. So I'm not sure I understand.
Well, some landlords are not making the apartments available for rent.
So,
but the apartments are vacant. So that wouldn't that have an effect on the census and how, and future funding,
anybody?
Like for schools and.
We're getting no's from up here because there are no people.
There are no people there
with those apartments. Yeah, we have another one. Where's our other microphone? Okay, further in the back over there. Or what am I missing? We have somebody. Okay, wherever the microphone is.
I want to ask a big picture question, actually. And New York City is really a model for the rest of the nation in terms of getting its act together with respect to reaching hard-to-count communities. And we know that, in particular with immigrant communities, New York City is not the only place in the country that has large immigrant populations. So I want to ask a best practices, kind of lessons learned piece for other states and other cities with large communities of color or hard-to-count populations to sort of figure out what they can do to learn from our act together in New York.
And we've got 1 minute for this, and then we're going to run out of time for this hour. So who wants it? You want to run through this real quick, Stacey?
So let me just say the first thing. New York City, unlike any other city, we have an Office of Immigrant Affairs here in New York City that's part of our charter. It is a chartered office, and Commissioner Shama Fatima Shama is here. So we're a little different in that we have ongoing relationships with the variety of diversity of immigrant groups in New York City in terms of outreaching for services, access to services, language access. So it's always been an ongoing relationship with city agencies and with nonprofits. So the census is just one more thing that's happening now in terms of civic engagement. But we have relationships to build on why we're successful in this endeavor.
Valeria Treves, you have 15 seconds to add to that.
Yeah, I just wanted to stress again the role of community-based organizations as well. Our panelists talked about Washington Heights in 2000 as an example. There was a community-based organization, Alianza Dominicana, that was working extensively at a grassroots level. And I think that we shouldn't undercount the importance of grassroots organizing, leadership development within our immigrant bases to get the word out about the census.
Listeners, we have a whole other hour coming up with a New York City subway quiz and more from the green space. We're going to have prizes to give out, maybe to some phone callers, maybe to some people here in the audience in the green space if you are subway scholars. But for now, we thank all our guests. We thank our fabulous green space team led by Indira Etwaru and the amazing Feet Into Worlds project, immigration reporting project led by John Rudolph, in conjunction with so many ethnic and community newspapers. See their material at news.feetintoworlds.org. The word two spelled out, news.feetintoworlds.org. Brian Lehrer and WNYC from the Jerome L. Green Performance Space.